Welcome to 5 from 7s and 12s. This is episode 1, and the theme is Hidden Gems.
Welcome to 5 from 7s and 12s, a music podcast.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Dave.
We're two mates who've been playing and listening to music for decades.
We do a deep dive into the stories behind the songs, from obscure to well-known.
From Halfman Off Biscuit to Elton John.
Each episode, we choose a theme and choose five different songs each to unpack and discuss.
You may be a music geek like us, or just someone who's looking to explore and hear something you've never heard before.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's get started with today's topic, Hidden Gems. Mark, we've just had a listen to your first song on a beautiful hot summer's day here in Perth, and it was a really spaced out jam. Really liked it a lot. It's a really cool record. Tell me all about it. What is it, and how did you hear about it?
Okay, so the album is called the band's called The Alps, and the album's called just called Three. Okay, and the track is Labyrinths. So it came out in 2008, and the Alps are a San Francisco project, or almost like a side project for a few musicians based over there. So you've got a band called Tarantelle, and the leader of that band is Jeffrey Cantu Ledesma, and he was joined by a friend of his from another band called Tussle, Alexis Giorgio Papoulis. Mate, they've all got stupid names, haven't they? Well, not
really
stupid, just like
podcast,
hard to
anyway.
Say, exactly. Plus a guy called Steve Huwika from a band in San Francisco called Troll. And they sort of came together and created this, what I think is like almost like a cinematic masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's like you say, it's really spacey.
Is
it's
the
quite
whole album
psychedelic.
Instrumental?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these guys have done four albums up to now. The last one was actually a while ago. Easy Action was out in 2011. And the reason I chose Alps is because, obviously, the theme today, we're talking about hidden gems. Mm. And for this is really about record shopping. Not so much crate digging. I'm not never been that obsessive, but this is all about when you go into a record store, and in this case, this is my favourite. My biggest local like record store in Manchester is Piccadilly Records, which you've been to.
Yeah, you sent me
there.
Hand-drawn map.
Yes.
I remember. It was the best thing about going to Manchester for me was I was going to your hometown. We were already best buddies.
Yeah.
And you drew me this fantastic hand-drawn map with all of the little cool locations to visit.
And the bars and the venues
and
all
that.
And
I basically just had that little map. Yeah. It was like my little Lonely Planet guide. Was your personalized, you know, you will love these things, Dave.
Yeah.
Go here. And I did love all of the things.
It was awesome. Really, I'm so glad that I could help in some way.
And Piccadilly Records is a brilliant record store, so it was such a good recommendation. And I know that you have discovered lots of hidden gems and great music by having that as your local store.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things they do that is above and beyond for most record stores is they've got a little bio, a little description, handwritten for every single record in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is how dedicated the staff
are. It's a great discovery place because you can, you can definitely, you know, that whole thing that people are trying to do most of the time with trying to find new music is, I know I like these things, but I want to extend it out. I want to find what's next. And to do that, you sometimes need a little bit of help, either from mates or whatever. We'll talk about that a little bit today on the podcast.
Yeah, or websites or wherever you find them. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the time you go in record stores and, you know, you see a cover you like the look of, or you see a record on a certain label and think, oh, you know, that's on Discord or that's on Rough Trade or that's on 4AD, and you get an idea, I might like this. However, Getting a little bio like is incredible.
Yes.
And they're so like helpful there. You can ask any of the lads and lasses that work there.
Yeah. The thing I really liked about it was that they were really they weren't that sort of like standoffish, too cool for school type of
It wasn't like the high fidelity movie.
Yeah, where they're like, fuck off with your balance basket or whatever, you know. Yeah. They were very much more like, yeah, we want to tell people about music. At least the people that I talked to when I was there. I picked up a few CDs that I was picking up at the time going through. And I remember just kind of like getting a few randoms, which is a really good way of discovering new stuff.
Oh,
right?
No. You look, it
pick
really,
up a couple of randoms based on a suggestion.
It really is. However, with this is, you know, they've got that on the label, you know, it might have said, you know, for fans of space rock, kraut rock, etc., etc., you'll love this.
Yes.
You know, so you go like, oh, this is ticking all the boxes.
Yeah.
Take it up to the counter.
So did you buy this one on vinyl? Was this?
Yes. This was on vinyl. And this is one of those albums, I mean, look, they're really not well known.
Mm.
There's another band called Alps. There's also a band called Sick Alps.
I was going to say, like, if you call yourself the Alps, it's such a great band. I mean, I love it, but it's like, you know, it's probably going to be taken by another band, and you kind of have to live with that. We have the same with our local band. We play together in a post-punk band, and we're called Brackets.
Mm.
And when we were naming our band, we were like, it doesn't really matter, does it?
No.
That there's other bands out there called Brackets. We can do that.
Well, exactly, because we're not really ready for our North American and Canadian tour.
I think we played one gig. No, two gigs this year, didn't we? Two gigs this year.
We actually did three.
Three, did we? Oh, okay.
Good. Yeah. I realised myself the other day because we did one of the convenience.
Good. So,
of course we did. Yes.
Yeah. So, like, having a band name like the Alps, I think, is a really good, like, you know, we're not trying to be anything other than a hidden gem. You know, we're going.
Yeah.
Because if they get too big, they probably will have to change their band name because someone's going to try and say, hey, we've already had that.
Yeah. Exactly. But I don't think these guys ever will, to be perfectly honest.
No, they're not
honest.
Trying to, which is good. They're probably a local affair.
Yeah. And look, you know, you can hear, like I said, there's a bit of sort of kraut rock in there. There's definitely a lot of sort of psychedelia, but not necessarily the noisy 60s psychedelia, but maybe some more sort of experimental electronic psychedelia. But obviously they still use drums, bass, guitars and things, but there's also a lot of keyboards in there.
It's definitely worth checking out. I really like the sound of it.
There's lots of space in there.
Yeah.
There's also kind of like bass lines that are like kind of just like really smooth and flowing.
Grooving.
And grooving, and they kind of like come back in, the same bass line comes back in like three or four times during the album. So it's one of those albums you want to put on late at night and just kind of bliss out to.
Yeah, very cool.
Really fun.
Good first
I would
one,
recommend
Mark.
It. Yeah.
And so we do, as we said before, have all of these tracks up on the Spotify playlist that goes along with the episode. So yeah, check them out. Great first selection. Let's listen to my one.
So we're talking about hidden gems. We're talking about how do we discover new music? What are the different ways we can do it? And for this one, I think we're moving over towards sort of the printed medium or magazines. Is that correct, Dave?
That's right. So my first song here that we just checked out is Warren Zevon or Zevon and Rosarita Beach Cafe. And I discovered this one through the Uncut Play CDs that they come out with each of the magazines. I used to buy Uncut magazine all the time. I bought it every month. And it was, I think it's a really brilliant music magazine. I think most people have moved away from print media at this particular point in 2022, where we are. You don't necessarily have, you know, that many publications and people that be listening to, but they are still there on the shelves in the newsagent, and they put out these CDs. Most of the time Uncut has like 15 songs or whatever on a CD, and it's the best songs that they want to sort of tout and get out there for that month. And I got one, and it was a sort of, I think it was just like the best music of that time, but it was this was a song, the Warren Zevon one, was a song that actually was released posthumously when he had a release out that his, I think, son had found in the basement or whatever of the house, and they had all these unreleased tracks. So this was released as a, you know, after his death, and it was a release that I guess hadn't sort of been brought to light before. So Warren Zevon is, I guess, someone who a lot of people would know, not necessarily a hidden gem for many. But I think it's really cool that those ones where you kind of sometimes get a record that has was dying away in the archives of someone's house or basement or whatever, and then discovered, you know?
Yeah. And look, it's funny because Warren Zevon or however you pronounce it, is someone that I would have only come across through a magazine like Uncut.
Yeah, they champion that kind of music. To be honest,
they do, yeah, because they do a lot. They do a lot of that sort of alt country, sort of Americana sort of thing, or they used to.
Yeah, singer-songwriters from the 70s, big, you know, that kind of era. I mean, it's known, I guess, as a rock magazine, and they don't, you know, like, they don't really focus, for example, on the biggest music of today would be hip hop and pop music. They don't really focus on that sort of stuff.
It's a bit dad rock.
It is dad rock.
The
for
vibe.
Sure.
Like, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's great. But I think the best thing about it for me, what I used to love, was the reviews.
Yeah.
They got an incredible amount of reviews at the back of the magazine and the CD, like you said, because, you know, the very first time I heard one of the bands that we share in common in terms of one of our favourite bands, Parquet Courts, Stoned and Starving rocked up on one of their compilations. And I used to have a tradition of buying Uncut when I was getting on a plane. You know,
it's
because
perfect for that.
Perfect for that. You're like, I just want something. I'm not sure I want to read a book. I just want to read you something other than the in-flight entertainment magazine. And I get Uncut knowing I've got this CD. It'll introduce me to a few new tracks.
Yeah, I used to have it like that. I'd have the CD Walkman, you know, because nowadays you've got your iPod or whatever, you wouldn't have that or your phone.
No.
But like in the day, you'd go onto the plane, get the Uncut. You'd have the CD, you'd be listening to it and checking out the and reading the magazine at the same time. It was a perfect way to pass a bunch of time on a flight, for sure.
Yeah.
So do you know much about Warren Zevon?
No, only really just through what I've read, magazines like, you know, Uncut and things. Yeah.
Probably his biggest songs are Werewolves of London, which, you know, that one's probably his biggest song. And then Lawyers, Guns and Money is another of his. But like his first album, I would like heavily recommend. It's full of gems. And it's really like it's an album. It's a self-titled. I think it was I've got the date that it was like 1976 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, 1976. And he had a. And then in 1980, he brought out another album with Bad Luck Streak and Dancing School, which is a really good one. The songs that I would check out would be like Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me, With My Back Turned, Looking Down the Path is really good, Hasten Down the Wind, and they're all on his debut album. He was kind of like a songwriter for about 10 years leading up to that for other people.
For other people, okay.
And had never really made much of it. Like, it was pretty tough going. And then this album was fairly, you know, fairly well received. But he was always, I think, you know, underneath a lot of the other singer-songwriters of the day, whether it be Neil Young, Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of sort of singer-songwriter ilk.
Okay.
But anyway, this one was from Preludes. It's worth checking out. The whole thing is really good. It was released in 2007, and as I said before, it was like all released in the 70s and then never saw the light of day until his son, Jordan, was clearing out the basement, and then out it came. So Uncut put it on their CD at some point. That's how I discovered it.
Yeah.
And it's a winner. And a lot of Warren Zevon's stuff, I think, is really good. And, you know, something that probably if you're into singer-songwriter type music, really good lyrics,
you'd appreciate
really good.
It. Then you'd appreciate it. And also, look, I think you raise a good point here because we're talking about hidden gems. And, you know, you hinted just before on like how the world's changed. You know, like we don't necessarily buy our magazines, but like, if you think about back in the day when we first started getting into music, it was all about the print media, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
So, like, here locally in Perth, you had Express, which was, like, you know, almost like the Bible. My friend Mel, my partner Mel, I've got a friend. sorry, Mel. Was only talking about it yesterday, how she used to get her parents to pick it up. Or if they saw it in the shopping centre, they'd pick it up for her, you know.
Yeah.
She read
I
it
reckon
every week.
It sucks now that if you want to get a gig that's going on locally...
Yeah.
There's not sort of like a central place to do that.
No.
Before it was like, Express Magazine is going to have every single gig lined up and you're going to go, all right, what's on Saturday? And super easy to find out. Plus they'll have some reviews. They'll have some like, you know, stuff about movies that are coming out or whatever. And that's the same in any city you go to.
Yeah,
so
yeah, they've always got something. You pick it up, don't you? And that was always the way you found out about stuff. But also in the UK, and I think you probably got it out here, but for a while there, we had a lot of weekly magazines like NME.
Yes.
New Musical Express, which I think is still going in online maybe. But you also had Melody Maker and Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds was my favourite for some reason. I don't even know why looking back. But they were like, again, almost like Bibles.
Yeah.
You'd grab one each week and just to check out what was coming up. Because if you think about it as well, like back in the day, you didn't have access. Like we're so used to having every bit of information we need at our fingertips on our phone that we carry around.
We
claw and we searched for it.
Yeah,
you know, and so you know these things like buying these magazines, you'd hear about, you know, the front cover there, but you'd be like, oh, who's this band? Who's Sonic Youth?
Mm.
Or you know, because they'd be picking what they thought was the new big thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Sometimes you'd be reading about a band for quite a while.
Yeah,
like, this band sounds fascinating,
and you wouldn't even
get
to hear them.
Yeah,
yeah, I know.
Great.
So
I loved that.
So there was an element you had to look, you had to search harder. So I'm glad you brought this up because also one thing that's made a bit of a comeback is, do you remember as well fanzines? I don't know how big they were here.
Yeah, for sure.
In Perth. But
it was kind of like a bit before my era.
Yeah, it would be actually. Yeah, because I'm older than you. So yeah, but it was like, it was a big thing when I was like a sort of in my mid to late teens, all the record stores you went in and they'd have like near the counter, there'd just be all these racks of all these fanzines. And they're all like produced at home. Like people just needed access to like a photocopier.
Yeah.
And the fact that they bothered to staple these things together and they were like really DIY, but they were really cool. Like some of them were really cool. And that was another little world because that was very much a DIY thing. Came out of the punk scene and again, it came out and emerged and developed alongside the independent music scene, you know, because so it started with the first one that I'm aware of was Sniffing Glue, which was the punk Bible.
Yeah.
And again, that was because people...
I think they coined the term, didn't they?
Yes.
I think one of the writers from that actually was the first
could
to use
used
punk.
The word
and
punk.
Then,
could have been, yeah. Although I do think punk was used briefly back in... you remember when their famous compilation Nuggets?
Yeah.
I think punk was used in that.
Okay.
But that was like to describe those garage rock bands.
Yeah, we should
those
talk about compilations
punks,
later as well.
But we will talk about that. But
all right,
yeah,
let's
really
to
good,
your next
really
song.
Good choice that, Dave.
Mark, we've listened to your second song. It's The Weather Prophets. I really enjoyed it. It's like it's a song that you discovered by listening to the radio. So this is another way you can find a hidden gem. Tell me about your radio listening experiences in the north of England.
Yeah, well, look, to be honest, I picked this because don't get me wrong, I love this track. I love this track. This track came out and it was 1986. And the reason I heard it was most people listening to the show will have heard of John Peel. He's pretty much a colossus when we talk about exploring and giving people hidden gems or introducing people to new artists. Yeah, because for me, you know, John Peel or the John Peel show, nobody had more of an influence on me personally in the music that I listen to today and have listened to over the years. And so I started listening to John Peel probably when I was about 13, 14. And I was put onto him by a friend. We're going to talk a little bit as well about the importance of word of mouth and friends in learning about new music, aren't we?
Yeah.
But it was kind of like my mate Matt Evans, he was like, he had older brothers. So he was like, you know, taping his brother's records and bringing them around. And then he's like, oh, have you listened to John Peel? So start this John Peel. And that was me every single evening. Because at that point, John Peel was on at night, every night during the week, Monday to Friday. and it just became essential listening. And I had my little crappy stereo with a tape in, and I'd have it on pause. I'd have a new tape ready, and I just used to tape stuff off the show all the time. Because the thing that was that people don't realize about John Peel was, like, he had this same kind of attitude towards music, i.e. he always wanted to listen to something new. Mm. And he started right back. He went to the States in the mid-60s, and he actually got his first gig on radio there purely because he was from Liverpool and the Beatles mania was sweeping across the States. And he kind of, like, he didn't really hint that he knew them, but he said he didn't disavow them from thinking he might know the Beatles and he might have some tidbits. So that's how he got his break. Then he came back to London in 67 and he got a job on, you know, you've probably heard about all those weird sort of pirate radio stations that used to have out of boats.
Yeah, they had the movie about it as well.
Yeah,
the boat
they did,
that rocks,
The Boat That Rocks, which was
a pretty bad movie.
Pretty bad, actually. But good actors in it, but the movie was a bit cheesy, wasn't
it? I was
it?
Really hoping it was going to be good because the concept of it was really great. And it was, definitely a really interesting part of, like, British history in regards to what was going on there, and that they had to get into, like, international waters or whatever, and then they were beaming it out across the country.
They were, and there was a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, Radio Luxembourg is one that I remember the name of.
And Radio Caroline. And so he worked for Radio London, okay? He got his job there. And weirdly, his full name is John Robert Parker Ravenscroft. That's his full name. And weirdly, at the time, like, they were sort of saying, oh, you need a zippier DJ name. And literally, one of the women, I think it was the receptionist or one of the women in the office at the time, just went, what about John Peel? And then just carried on with her work.
It became such a well-known guy.
How bizarre is that? Like,
like
this woman just went, what about, like, Peel? And he goes, I can't even remember who it was that suggested it.
Yeah.
But that was it. It was John Peel from then on in. But look, so he worked broadcasting on Radio 1 from 67 until his death in 2004, right? And all that time, he just said he wanted to hear something different every time. And if he just, and he would get sent stuff all the time. So I think there's like I've got a little list here to show you how many records he got sent. Because he gave bands the first chance that no one else had, he just got sent demo tapes, singles, you know, all the time. He would have like every day the post would bring in boxes full of this stuff.
And I wonder if he got team at some point that would listen to stuff, or if
he
it was
thought he had
him.
To do it himself. He put so much pressure on himself, and he just had a box of tapes in his car of demos, and he'd put it on, and then he does admit that if it was really bad, he'd throw it out the window and then just put another one in. So, but he did say, like, that this give you a bit of an idea. He came back from a 3-week holiday in 1986 at the end, and there were 173 LPs. 91 12-inch singles and 179 7-inch singles waiting for him.
Jesus.
And that's without the
demo
tapes.
You can't go on holiday.
That's without the demo tapes.
Yeah.
But he was so meticulous, he wanted to give people a chance.
Yeah.
And so bands like the Weather Prophets, we would never have heard of them, you know. But this goes right back to the beginning. He was the first one to play Mark Bolan, David Bowie, Pink Floyd,
he famously
Hawkwind.
Played The Undertones, Teenage Kicks twice, because that was the only one he ever played two times in a row or whatever.
Yeah, because he loved it so much. And he's got Teenage Kicks, it's on his gravestone, which I think is really cool. But look, and he even jokes about it. So he sort of said, he once said on this Channel 4 programme, Sound of the Suburbs, I've always imagined I'd die by driving into the back of a truck while trying to read the name on a cassette. And people would say, he would have wanted to go that way. Well, I want them to know I wouldn't. But no, look, the guy was amazing, yeah. He would play, and also I think he was so eclectic. So he'd play like a dub reggae track, and then he'd play a hardcore punk track, and then he'd play, I don't know, some African high life track and then a techno track. Compartmentalize it.
With these kinds of guys, they become the tastemaker for an entire country, but it also means that for some bands who are trying to get big, if he doesn't like them, then that's a really big deal because it means that they don't get radio play and they don't get the break. So for all of those that do get it, and I mean, I think the same happens here in Australia. Like, two of the biggest ways that you could get discovered in Australia would be Triple J, which I believe at the time that I listened to Triple J was all about Richard Kingsmill, and he was kind of like the music director or whatever of the time.
Tastemaker.
And if you sent something that Richard Kingsmill liked, he'd play it. Tough luck. And then Rage was the other one. And I don't know exactly how they had a lot of the time they had guest programmers on there, but that was always a fantastic way for me living in Bunbury in the southwest of the country with obviously no internet when I was younger.
Yeah.
A brilliant way to be discovering music because you'd have a band from America touring Australia, they'd pop onto the Rage couch and start talking about, these obscure little bands from their neck of the woods, and they'd have it in the archives there at Rage, and they'd play it at three in the morning or whatever. It was you'd have to stay up overnight to watch it to discover some new music. And I definitely, for the first time in my life, heard Joy Division, Talking Heads, Blondie, heaps of different things.
Yeah.
Just like, late at night on Rage. Yeah.
But I think with John Peel, to be fair to him, though, he would just give it a go. He wouldn't care how badly it was recorded. It's just, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah. Well, you'd rather it be John Peel than anyone else, right? Because he discovered such brilliant music.
Well, if you list any of the bands that you and me like, particularly the English bands, they pretty much all started with doing a Peel session.
Yeah.
So if you liked a band, he'd invite them in to come down and record maybe four tracks. Mm. So, it goes right back to, they had all sorts, so they've had, that's like Bowie was in there and people like that. But later on, all the punk stuff, all Joy Division, New Order, Pulp, all these bands, they got the first exposure on John Peel.
Mm.
And, it just completely gave them the opportunities. Can you think of any of the big
English bands that just off the top of your head, out of interest, that John Peel didn't like? Any of the really big ones that he kind of wasn't a fan of? Like, was he an Oasis guy? Did he ever like Oasis? No. What about Blur? That would have been after, right?
No, I think he might have played Blur, but I think he really concentrated on giving people the opportunity who needed it.
Yeah, for sure.
And a lot of those bands that were already big and got it, well, they don't need his patronage. Yeah.
Well, they were small at some point.
They were, but like he gave the White Stripes their first session in the UK and exposure. The Fall was his favourite band of all time if he had one band,
He's definitely famous for that, isn't he? Being a sort of like a shining light of I will put out music that is an alternative to what you're hearing elsewhere.
And
that's one of the greatest ways to be able to discover new music. We met at RTR FM, which is a community radio station.
We did.
And that again is the motto of or slogan of that radio station is the sound alternative, and they really concentrate doing something that is different to what you would hear anywhere else. And that means that you can hear stuff on that radio station that you would never hear on commercial radio, and you wouldn't hear on Triple J either or anywhere else.
No. And look, one example of that locally is like Tame Impala.
Yeah, they got discovered by
They got their first play, I think RTR played their first demo.
Yes, for sure.
Before they even had the single. Yeah. And, and I like the fact that you've got these people who are interested in doing that, that push the alternative, push the local scene. One of the things that I think was most interesting or most special about Peel was that he didn't stick to one genre. Mm. He didn't have a particular favourite genre. He just was like, if he liked it, he'd play it. He didn't actually care if this was like...
Yeah, it's great.
He was playing like all this horrific, like, that like Napalm Death and all that stuff. He got really into that. They're like really full on, and he'd have like...
Napalm Death. I was listening to Cannibal Corpse in the car on the way home yesterday. Band?
Yeah.
And like... I don't get it, man.
It's too much.
I was like, what is the vocalist even doing? Yeah. It's just the same noises over and over again.
But Peel would play that stuff,
but then
he'd also get into grime. And in fact, weirdly, like, he was known as being a pioneer for a lot of black music as well. It wasn't just this kind of white garage rock bands. He would be playing, he'd be the first one playing dub reggae.
Mm.
He'd be the first one playing like a lot of weird techno and grime and all this dubstep and stuff. It started on his shows, which most people don't realize. But there's a little quote I've got here, which I thought you'd quite like, because it sort of sums up how he was prepared to like embrace new things. So he said he talked about his 1976 discovery of the first album by the Ramones as being a real seminal event for him. So he said, at the time, almost all the new bands comprised of people who'd previously been in successful bands who'd broken up and then reformed. While I played the first Ramones LP, it was identical to the first time I'd heard Little Richard. The intensity was frightening. So I played five or six tracks on the next show, and immediately I received mail from people demanding that I never play stuff like that again. Whenever that happens, I always go in the opposite direction. So I played more, and it was great. It was a classic case of changing courses in midstream, and in a month, the average age of the audience dropped by 10 years and the whole social class changed, which I was very pleased about.
Wow, that's cool, hey? Difficult to do for a media outlet as well, right? When your back's against the wall with the complaints coming in, to go, you know what?
I know I'm right here. Yeah, and yeah. He just went by his hunch, and, you know, he had the controllers of BBC saying, you better tell us you're not playing punk.
Yeah, everyone's got a higher
You better
up.
Not be playing punk.
Yeah.
And the producer, John Walters, turned around to them and said, mate, that's all we've been playing for the last month. And this guy was like outraged, but they were like, well, this is the new music. This is what we do. It's what you employ us to do.
Yeah. Great chat, Mark. All right, let's listen to the next one.
So, Dave, for your next choice on our Hidden Gems, you're going down the avenue of those random gigs that you can attend while you're traveling the world. And this is a band, I have to admit, I've never heard of before, and they're called Clan Eileen. And the track is Fog, I believe. So tell us a bit about this band. How did you come across them?
So, first of all, I guess that... You know, with this band, I should say that they're a band from Tokyo. So my wife and I were traveling through the city and we were kind of like, we want to go and see some local bands.
Yeah.
So, you know, we started looking up websites and at first we were sort of struggling with it a little bit because all of the websites are in Japanese and we were kind of, some of them have translations,
some of them don't. Yeah,
You're going to a city and most of the time, you know, you want to kind of get a little bit of a local flair, get a bit of what's going on in the place. So we ended up going like, well, let's just find out what the area is where there might be some local bands. And we went to this little underground pub there called Fever. And if anyone goes to Tokyo, I'd really recommend it. It's a really great little bar.
Fever.
Yeah, it's called Fever. I mean, I don't know what the Japanese name for it is, but I think it's in English called Fever.
Yeah.
And so we went down there and it was like, it was a weird one because we saw that the gig posting was quite early. You know, it was on at like sort of 5 or 6 p.m. or something like
okay.
that. You know?
So
like,
yeah.
Right, like, is that,
that's, seems a bit
for,
early.
Yeah, it seems early, right? And so in Perth, we would usually, start at 8 o'clock or something like that. Maybe 9 would be the, you know.
Yeah, first band or
whatever. And so, you know, we were like, okay, well, that's pretty early. But I guess we'll just go along and see what happens. So we went down and it was like, you know, down a staircase and then this packed room. And we were like, what does this band seems to be like? You know, pretty good. And then there was just a cacophony of noise. It was really loud in there, really kind of like reverberating around. And we were watching this. It's a duo. Clan Eileen is a duo. They were playing at the time. They just released their album Night Seeing, which is a brilliant release. This is the only one that we're going to probably have that isn't on our Spotify playlist because the band isn't on Spotify, unfortunately.
Mm. On Bandcamp, is that right?
It's on Bandcamp. Yeah, so you can check it out on Bandcamp. But they were playing this at the time, a lot of the songs off the album Night Seeing. And on the back of the band was a huge screen and it was like splattered paints and things going everywhere, you know? And so we were like watching this extremely intense band and it's just two of them making all this noise. But it sounded great, right? It was like it was like really huge sound. And we were the only white people in the room as well, which was a great feeling, you know, being like totally in this local scene of Japan and in the middle of Tokyo in a punk club with this post-punk cacophony and everything. It was great. And all of this art was going up. And we were watching the artwork going, what is going on here? Because it was timed so perfectly with the music.
Oh, okay.
But I was thinking it was a computer program or whatever, right? There's this big projector and this paint splattering all up on the screen. And like for the whole show, I was like mesmerized by this band. It was a really great experience. And both Ange and I were, you know, smashing back a few beers, having a wonderful time. And then towards the end, I actually saw the artist was over in the corner and they were doing live art with the band. So everything that they were doing was timed in and so they were swooshing around different colors.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a live artistic performance.
Yeah, so, and that wasn't really, it wasn't even really part of it. Well, it was part of it, but it wasn't like visually the artist was over in the corner and yeah. There was a group of Japanese people around them too, kind of just watching them do their thing. And the camera was over the top of their artwork over essentially like a big piece of glass. And they would clean it off every now and then splash more paints.
That is mad.
Yeah, and it was a really kind of like wild experience that was, you know, for today's episode where we're talking about hidden gems, it's about that kind of going into a room, and you can do it locally in your own hometown too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
but like
yeah, yeah.
Going into a room where you kind of like, you don't know what to expect. You don't know any of the bands on the lineup, but you're just kind of going, let's have an experience, right?
Yeah.
And so this was a kind of like, we don't know the band. We don't know the area we're in. We don't really have any idea what to expect. I had no idea what the music was going to be.
No.
And then it turned out to be this brilliant post-punk band. So
that is brilliant.
Afterwards, I was like, all right, well, I'll buy the T-shirt and I'll buy the vinyl. And they didn't have any vinyl for sale. So I was like, all right, I'll buy the T-shirt. And then I went home and listened to it. And then they've got like four brilliant albums that are all these really different eclectic ones. One of their albums is like a real drone type album where they kind of hold one note through the whole album. And
really?
Yeah, one note. And then around that, they build different soundscapes, you know?
Right.
And the band is instrumental mostly.
Yeah. So would you say, is it like a sort of post-rock sort of band, would you say?
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, I know.
For sure.
It's hard. I know, you know, we don't like to pigeonhole bands and put them in little categories, but sometimes it helps to have a rough idea, doesn't it?
I mean,
so you say like post-rock or...
Post-rock for sure.
Yeah.
They on their Bandcamp, they call it a spiritual punk duo. So, you know, whatever that sort of means to you. But yeah, like definitely I think it's, you know, a post-rock band. It sort of got a little bit of that. There's like Canadian post rock bands that remind me. I'm trying to think of that. A little bit like Godspeed You Black Emperor kind
of
vibe in parts. Some of the stuff is like that.
So quite epic soundscapes.
Yeah, epic soundscapes.
Know,
some
yeah,
of their
yeah.
other material has multiple instruments on there too.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time they're droning with guitars and getting multiple layers of guitars.
And mostly instrumental.
Mostly instrumental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All wow. Right.
So
Well, look, that sounds awesome.
Before we do move on, tell me any live experience that you've had where you didn't know what you were going into that you can recall.
Yeah, it's a good one because, look, I'm like you. I quite like if I'm overseas, if I can.
Mm.
Just scan the live if you can. Look at the gig guide, and is there anything good on? And I had I went to a great venue in Boston years ago, and it's called TT the Bear's place, right? And what I didn't realize was until later was that it's a classic local venue. So it's like the equivalent in Perth would be Mojo's, right? Been there forever. TT the Bears is where people like the Pixies started playing.
Yeah,
I only found
this
after. And Throwing Muses and, you know, bands I guess like Dinosaur Jr. and I guess early days of like Sonic Youth and stuff would
I'm
play
trying
there.
To think if it was the same place so, I went when I was in Boston.
So it was a really small little place. But like what I loved was like you went in there and look, to be honest, mate, I can't remember half the bands we saw.
Yeah.
But we got there early and, you know, people are like, oh, how you going? You know, the band are like, hey, thanks for coming down. And then they're like, hang on, where are you from? And then you start explaining, oh, I'm from England, but I live in Australia. And this, I remember one dude particularly, his like mind was blown.
He's
that
like,
we'd
how did
turned
you find
up
us
at this
here?
gig. Where like, because they played to about five people, the first band, and we were two of them.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I also remember I love like just little moments like going out to get a breather because it was all hot and sweaty in there. And you just kind of like you got a laneway and you look down and there's kind of like a cop car with its lights on it flashing at the end of the road. And you just like, you feel like you're in an American movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you feel like, wow, this is cool. But the headline act was Bobby Bear Jr.
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever come across him. So his dad, Bobby Bear, was a famous Nashville country and western singer.
Okay.
So he grew up in Nashville. But he's gone down the route of being a lot more alternative. And there was just a three-piece, ridiculously good musicians, but also ridiculously high. I don't think I've ever seen a bunch of people on stage more off their chops. And but like
still holding it together.
Oh mate, next level. Like yeah. I remember the drummer was playing like the drums and he had a keyboard and at times he's holding down the beats off his head and with one hand and the other hand he's playing the keyboard parts.
Love it. So
it
good.
Was so much fun. So that was a good one.
Really
good. That was
mate,
a good
I'm
one.
Going traveling this year, so I'm so excited just thinking about, you know, going to music in Slovenia and like Italy
and Barcelona and stuff. So look, around, so. There's always opportunities and it's a great way to have a local experience.
Yeah.
And in a way it doesn't matter who's on,
yeah.
but you might get lucky.
Well, often you end up falling in love with a band that you probably wouldn't have, but it's about capturing that moment in time that you happen to walk down into the basement, watch that band, and then it's a memory that you're always going to have.
Yeah.
So the discovery of music is often that way too, right? Where it's like, if that was just played on the radio as you were passing, often it would have just washed over you.
Yeah, you wouldn't, but, you know, really been that fussed.
Because it's tied to this great experience and there's so many other things. You're in another city, you're having the time of your life, away you go. Then something about it really resonates.
I think so. So I'd always recommend it. I think it's a really fun part of the holiday to go and catch some live music in whatever town you're in. Yeah. Or even
sing the bad ones, right? Because there's also the bad ones. Where
some of those
like,
experiences can make for good stories.
Yeah,
can't
totally.
They?
All right, well, let's listen to your next song. Mark, we've had a lovely beer and sat in the sun for a little bit and listened to listened to the tunes. Very nice, wasn't it? So we just had a listen to Malcolm Middleton, My Loneliness Shines, your third song, and it's a really cool song. Mm. Always, we were saying, great to hear someone singing in their accent, and this one is straight out of Scotland, and he's got a pretty thick Glaswegian accent going. So tell me about it. How did you discover it and why do you think this is a great hidden gem?
Well, look, I mean, a lot of people will know Malcolm Middleton,
mm-hmm.
From his work in Arab Strap. That's where he really rose to consciousness. So him and Aidan Moffat formed Arab Strap in 1995 and they went through for around about 10 years. I think they finally split 2006, but actually are now back together. So they actually released an album, Days Get Dark, in 2001. So they're back together. But in the meantime, Malcolm released 7 solo albums and also 3 albums under the pseudonym Human Don't Be Angry. But this came from an album, Into the Woods, from 2005. And the reason I found this, or the reason I wanted to talk about this, was really, when we're talking about hidden gems, back in the day, doesn't happen as much now, back in the day, remember mixtapes?
Oh, yeah.
And they were, like, amazing. You know, when someone took the time to curate a mixtape for you, it meant something.
Yeah.
Particularly,
it was hard to make a mixtape. The ones that I originally made when I was really young was, like, the two tape decks. And
you
had to record from the one cassette to the other cassette. You had a blank cassette in B, and then you had whatever it was in A. And you could record off the radio too.
Yeah.
But so to make the mixed cassette, if it was, you know, those types, you'd have to like wait to listen to the radio and the perfect song came on and then you click record.
Yeah.
Or if
yeah.
you had it on another tape, you could do it from one tape to another.
You could do it from one tape to another, although yeah. you did it with a lot of hiss there.
Oh,
but
it was awful.
But, you know,
like
yeah,
the quality
but,
of it.
But the
it
funny,
took a long time. The funny, so it was a real love letter, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Look, and the funny thing is when I moved here to Australia in 2008, I had to clear out a whole house full of stuff. And I threw out, I think, 3 or 4 bin bags full of tapes.
Yeah.
Like, there were just millions of them, but I kept about 15 of my favourite, and most of them are mixtapes.
Yeah.
So mixtapes done by amazing friends, people who had huge influence on my life, like Matt Evans. I've still got the Matt Evans tape he did me when he was 13. I still got that. And the writing's faded away.
So how
but
was
it,
he recording them? Off stuff that he bought? Like
yeah,
he had
yeah,
it
yeah,
he
yeah,
it,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Or his brother's records or whatever, yeah. and, you know. Yeah. But this one, this particular one, came from a good friend of mine called Kieran, who I was in a football team with for years. And Kieran was one of them guys that, like, you know, I thought I was bad for buying records. He was like the sort of guy who'd be sneaking records into the house so his girlfriend didn't know he'd been buying more records.
Spend all that money again.
Yeah, again. Yeah. Anyway, he did this fantastic tape. It's just called, I guess it's just the Partizan Way. Partizan being our football team. And it was just an amazing, like, it was so eclectic.
Yeah.
So he'd had, like, he inherited, when his father died, he inherited, like, the room we're sitting in now is about 4 meters by 4 meters or something. And that was his music room because his dad's lifetime collection he inherited.
Jam-packed.
And he had all these rare, like, Northern Soul records and early R&B and stuff. Mm. So he had a bunch of that on. And then he had a bunch of, because this would have been back in 2007. So it was like, do you remember we had that sort of the Americana and that kind of new freak folk scene?
Mm-hmm.
So I had kind of a bit of that on there, you know, the Felice Brothers, Bonnie Prince Billy, mm-hmm. the Shins, you know, there was all this sort of stuff on there that I did, you know, sort of knew and didn't know.
Yeah.
But like, but this was on it. Malcolm Middleton, My Loneliness Shines. And I was like,
it's
you know,
a great
like,
song.
Wow, I like this. Yeah. I like this. But
great dynamics in there. And it's really, really
and
cool.
And I'd never I'd never investigated his stuff.
Mm.
It made me go, oh. Because even with Arab Strap, I have to admit, this sort of passed me by, apart from probably hearing it on Peel shows, Peel Sessions, who we've just been talking about. I didn't really investigate him that much at the time, or Malcolm Middleton. So I went out, ended up getting the album Into the Woods, which is brilliant. He's also got another great album, which is called A Brighter Beat, which would have come out in 2008, I think. A Brighter Beat was 2007. Into the Woods, 2005. Waxing Gibbous, 2009, is fantastic. He's also had a latest solo album he put out was Bananas in 2018. For me, the mixtape, which I presume's been superseded now by Spotify playlists.
Yeah, a curated
and all
playlist
that.
Or whatever. It's not the same,
it's
is
not
it?
The same. There's the amount of effort is minimal compared to what it used to be. But then, you know, you could send a signal to someone. You could either be an appreciation because you're a really good mate of mine and I want to try and introduce you to some of the stuff you might not have heard, or like the other thing was doing mixtapes for girls that you fancied.
Yeah,
that was a thing. Well, I knew I would labor over them for days.
Yeah, definitely. Angie and I had some really like fun ones in right at the start of our relationship. We'd be burning CDs for each other with a mixture of different songs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And like Angie's were always so weird that like not weird like musically, just kind of more. I couldn't figure her out a little bit from what she put on there. You know,
you were thinking, is this a message or is it not?
Yeah, and so much of it was like she would have maybe like a classical piece on there, and then NoFX song, and then a Nirvana song, and then some obscure Canadian thing or whatever. And I was just kind of like, what is this all about? You know, it was like
it's a Canadian thing. Yeah, I don't know.
The thing that got me about that sort of mixtape was that I was always kind of like, thinking about the flow of the mixtape, you know?
I always wanted it to be kind of like
from the start of it to the end of it making some level of sense.
Yeah.
And I talked to Angie about it and she was like, no, I just like putting on heaps of random shit. And so she had a different vibe, you know, which is kind of cool, that whole thing.
But I'm more with you. I would think that what does this flow? Does this track lead nicely into this?
Yeah.
And I would often have mine start breakneck speed, and then the last part of the tape would be slowing down.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of bands do that, right? Where they'll put a sort of a contemplative piece at the end, right, or whatever. There's a whole lot of that kind of thing.
You have to think about it. And you also have to think about, it's a bit like the record. What's the opening track? Yeah. The opening track's important. What's the end track of the first side? Yeah. Then you've got the opening track of side two. So you're thinking, like, how do I create this as like an aural experience?
Yeah, totally. You know,
So for mixtapes for me, and this is why I kept some, because they mean a lot, because someone's put a lot of effort into this. They didn't just press play and record an album.
Yeah.
They've spent hours thinking, well, what's going to follow? Will he like this? Will he have heard of this?
Yeah.
And I always loved as well trying to put little bits in between the songs, just random recorded stuff, you know, or samples or whatever it is, or a little bit of, I don't know, anything, like just to make it a bit more fun. Yeah. You know?
And the other one that I think is kind of like sort of similar but different is the, you know, someone who is like, I remember with Ange, for example, she hadn't really listened to much David Bowie. And yeah. I was kind of like, I just loved David Bowie. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, you have to. And so the other one is like a curated, this is that the stuff that you were like of that artist, right?
Yeah.
And you do like your own best of.
Yeah.
Because it's like the best ofs that obviously get put out for, you know, in a store is usually like the greatest
hits.
The obvious ones. And sometimes it's like, no, you're missing the actual thing here, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the other one. And I know you were sort of doing one for me for Sonic Youth, and we've kind of talked about that kind of thing before as well, where it's like, if you've sort of had an artist that's passed you by in some way, and your mate goes, I know you'll like it. Then they can make that little bit of a mixtape that's kind of like, this was personalized for you. And that's sometimes a really good one too, right? It's slightly different than the mixtape where you're kind of going all over the map. But, you know, I think the old method needs to somehow come back. And so it's not so much about the time, but it's more, I guess, about the curation and making the thing a perfect choice for that person. So, like,
And I think another reason why the mixtape works, or you're talking about making CDs, is it's a physical object.
Yeah.
And so much now is, you know, it doesn't exist. It exists just like digitally or on your phone.
Yeah.
So you don't possess anything.
I bet if there was a way of doing that with vinyl, where you could, you know, relatively inexpensively make a vinyl compilation for somebody, that would pick up pretty well.
But I'm sure
that there's like all sorts of copyright issues or whatever with getting that job done. So you probably can't do it through a vinyl factory.
This
properly.
Is true. I don't know. It is interesting as we talk about mixtapes to reflect on the return of tapes in general.
Yeah, which I don't understand because the sound quality is not good. It's a bit of a strange one that a lot of punk bands nowadays, you'll see them putting it out.
Yeah.
Our local record store, like Rhubarb Records,
has now got a load of tapes. Exactly. Yeah. It's made a full-on comeback.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting, and I wonder if this part of it is almost a bit of a novelty.
Yeah.
Because it is a physical object.
Having a physical copy is nice.
And it's a technology that the people now are recording on this didn't grow up with.
No.
It's pre them, so it's maybe a bit more just fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look, it's cool. Don't get me wrong, but like the quality doesn't. They don't last. They hiss. You remember when they get tangled up? They're tangled up, and you have to get a pencil out.
And also the whole like, you want to listen to a particular song and you can't do that. You're fast forwarding and rewinding all the time, or you listen to the end of a side and you want to go all the way back to the front. Like,
and this is why the mixtape's got to be great.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You've got to listen to it in one go.
You can't have any bad stuff on there because it's like 3 minutes of bad song is a hassle. The other one is I used to every year make a mixed CD for my dad. I called it My Son Listens to What?
That's great.
Yeah, and so like my dad, who passed a few years ago now, would always listen like all the time in his car, whether he liked it or not.
He'd have a listen.
He would listen to it a lot, to the point where he would go, I really liked track 3, that Pavement song.
Good on you, Alan.
And so he hated the. I remember he in particular, he hated the Belle and Sebastian song I put on once. He was so infuriated by it. He was like, no, you missed the mark completely with that.
That's so good. Imagine getting angry about Belle and Sebastian.
Yeah, he hated it. But that's another one, right? It was a way to connect across generations. But you know, my dad was interested in what I was listening to. And you know, it was a cool way of going, you know, it's Christmas time and here's a little bit about like where I'm at in life. And, you know, because at the time after, you know, I did it all the years that I was living there, but also all of the years after I moved out. So we weren't still seeing each other all the time.
Yeah, yeah, but it became a Christmas tradition.
It was
tradition.
A tradition. And you know, he really enjoyed getting his mixed CD. That's good. Had, you know, about 15 years worth of them or whatever. And it was really cute. Yeah. So let's listen to the next song.
So, Dave, as we're discussing hidden gems, you're now moving over to the realms of those times when you just kind of wander into a record store and you go, you know, let's just take a bit of a punt on something new.
Yeah.
And you just go, this could be great, could be terrible, but look at the cover. I have no idea what it's going to sound like.
Yeah.
So is that the sort of vibe? Is that the sort of the background of this? This is a Brazilian release, I believe. I will let you murder the name
and
the title.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I'm terrible at this sort of thing, but this is, you know, the Portuguese. Yeah, it's Brazilian music, and it's Noriel Viela with Sou Om. He's known for samba, kind of. He's got a really bassy voice, and he's got this, this kind of. He was a guy from Rio de Janeiro who recorded only one album, and
It's really cool. Like I liked it. It's really fun.
It's really
isn't it?
Fun music. We were sort of saying before, you know, you put this on in the sunshine and have a beer, and you cannot be unhappy. It is it's beautiful, fun music to listen to.
Yes.
And look, this was a random punt at a record store. I often go down to Safari Records in Perth, which is, you know, they're a fairly
great store.
I would say curated type of record store, because the guy who runs that is really into world music.
John.
He's
a DJ, isn't he?
So
he tends to supply a lot of the DJs in Perth, doesn't
he? Yeah, and so he's got a fairly, I would say, like small collection, but it's really nicely picked out, and it's a great one to go in there and you just go, oh, like Afrobeat section, grab it, and you know. Oh yeah, $25. I'll give this a go. And I don't do it very often because, you know, it could be an expensive habit collecting records.
Yeah.
But it is a really good way to just sort of like find something random. Now, I didn't actually buy this record there, but it was a similar sort of record store on my travels.
Yeah.
And,
do you remember where you bought it?
I think it was Japan again, maybe.
Yeah,
I think
I was
in a Japanese record store with this one. I usually have picked up records along the way whenever I've been traveling, and I can't remember exactly where this one was. But Japan has fantastic record stores, so it might have been there. And Canada too. It could have been Canada, because definitely I've been in Montreal a lot fiddling through record stores and having a look at what's going on there.
Yeah.
But so, you know, in terms of like picking out like a random one, I've had some absolute joy with that. And the other one that I wanted to talk about in terms of, you know, hidden gems is all of the record labels, like Crypt, for example, that bring out the compilation records. They are a brilliant way as well of finding different stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So those like Garage Unknown records and things like that are a real winner. And also, The I can't remember the label off the top of my head, but those ones that do like the music from Burkina Faso and the music from Nigeria and all of those labels.
Yeah. Well, Soul Jazz do quite a few.
Soul Jazz, that's one of them. Yeah,
because they'll do a lot. They'll just do like the best of, you know, like rockers, like reggae or whatever, you know, like.
And they're like, really someone else is doing the hard work for you in terms of the crate digging or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and it's like,
you
know, like Malayan guitar music, for example, has picked up a lot over the last decade or whatever.
Definitely.
Because someone has gone in and gone, oh, this is brilliant sounds. This is really good stuff.
Yeah.
And some of those groups now are like fairly well known, you know, you think of like Tanarawan and they can tour anywhere in the world and sell a place out.
And they're professional musicians.
And they're like sub-Saharan African band,
right?
It's crazy stuff that this is, but someone else goes and does that work, and you can get such good stuff.
You
can,
you can, yeah.
And so this one in particular, Norio Viella, was one that I liked the look of him on the cover. He's wearing this kind of like bright clothing with his with his chest showing and a whole bunch of jewelry or like whatever.
Yeah,
and I was just like, this looks kind of cool. And you know, I found out later some of the stuff about him. He sung in another group called Nilo Amaro and his Cantores de Abano, which, you know, I had to listen to that stuff, and it's also really interesting Brazilian music. He's someone that they don't know much about. So, you know, similar to some of those guys that like the sort of Sugarmans and stuff like that, that, you know, maybe got lost along the way. And then for those guys, they were picked up in documentaries. But for him, he was just like, he bought out an album in the 70s. He actually died really young. He died at 38 back in 1975. And they're not really sure why he died on the internet. Like it was something hospital related.
Right.
So he either had leukemia or there was a mix up,
a complication
of a dental surgery or something like that. So they don't even know, you know, what happened to him, but they just know, like, you know, in terms of the internet, they just know what, you know, on all the websites, it's kind of like they say different things, something to do with a medical issue or whatever. And, probably his most well-known song is actually 16... I'm going to do the
butchering of this. It's usually me that gets to do this.
Which is 16 Tons in English. And it's an old Merle Travis song. So it's from the 1955, and it was a cover of that song. The 1955 Merle Travis version is great. It's a coal mining song about moving heavy loads, right? And it's a brilliant song in English, and he does a samba version of it that I really love. It's off the same album, and worth checking out. It got picked up for a 2014 Heineken ad, actually, and the Heineken ad's really funny. I watched that recently, and basically it's this guy who clambers up onto a boat and then he's got this, he's kind of like this, you know, like bearded, like he's been out in the sea forever. He's got really long hair, and he climbs up onto this cruise ship. And it's all of these really classy people everywhere. And then he kind of blows them all away with his dancing and his all of his moves and what he's doing. Like, and then he like slides a beer across the deck and it lands next to the sexy woman. And it's all of this kind of stuff, right? And every, you don't notice until halfway through the commercial the guy is a different guy in every scene. It just it's like all these doppelgangers, and there's about 30 of them through the commercial. And then, you know, he jumps off the boat and they all look over the side and all 30 of them are in the dinghy.
And
it's a really fun commercial, mainly because, like, the music is so wonderful and so fun. And it goes for about 3 minutes. So I don't know whether it was ever shown on TV or what the heck. But anyway,
that's hilarious.
It's worth checking out. So we'll put it in the show notes and you can check it out.
We certainly should. Now, one of the things I was just wondering, or you mentioned something about record labels. One record label I would definitely recommend if you're interested in Spanish-speaking music, particularly South American music, is Vampy Soul.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever checked that out.
I don't know, yeah.
It's great.
Okay.
Like, they release a lot of stuff from Spain, but also from South America.
Yeah.
And they do great compilations.
Yeah.
And, you know, these compilations are all just obscure garage tracks from 1967 from Peru and Colombia and all that. But that's a brilliant way to learn about new stuff. Because like you said, someone's done all the heavy lifting, and then you get to like enjoy it. And you know, another thing is the Tropicália movement in Brazil.
Yes.
So there's a classic compilation just called Tropicália. It's a double album.
Yeah, it's a
winner. If you're interested in Brazilian music, check that out. It's got Os Mutantes on, Gilberto Gil, a whole bunch of all famous musicians from around that time. And look, one of the things I was wondering about, how do you feel about listening to music sung in different languages that you don't understand?
Well, I'm as you know, I'm a lyrics guy, and I love, you know, being able to understand the story of a song, but it kind of switches my brain off to that, and it allows me to just tune into the music. And and also I really love just taking a detour. So one of the things I really love about this guy and this, like, and other things like this, like, is I would never sort of go, oh, I'm a fan of samba music or Brazilian samba music or anything like that. But when you put it on, because it's so different to what I would usually have on, it just creates a whole different mood in the household, right? So I love that. I love that you can kind of go, oh yeah, I'll put on this kind of like for example, I've got a fairly large jazz collection, in my vinyl collection, and it's probably where I go to more often than anything else, because it's so good for just putting on, you know, Miles Davis, Birth of Cool. And you can do anything in the house while it's on.
True.
And you're getting this beautiful music.
Yeah. And it appeals to a lot of people. So, like, depending on who you've got around here, it's not like, hey, let's listen to some hardcore punk. My mum loves that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, you can have it on in so many different situations.
Yeah.
But also, I'll tune into it, like, instrumental music or music in a different language. I'll tune into it in a different way than perhaps English music, where I'm kind of like listening in for those lyrics a lot more in the story.
Yeah.
But also, if there's a clunky English lyric, then it immediately makes me go, I hate that band, I hate that song. Like, I could be like, write them off because of something that I just think is a bit clunky.
You
know, I'm sure there's stacks in this Portuguese stuff that is like really cornball and awful. But I don't have to hear it, so it's fine. Yeah.
Exactly.
Are you the same?
I'm the same. Yeah. I wondered, because for me, I don't mind. And the same as when I'm traveling, the fact that I'm in a room full of people who speak a different language, I quite like not knowing what they're saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I'm like you. I can focus on something else.
Yeah. I remember being at the Francofolies Festival at one point, which is in Montreal. It's all French-speaking music. And there was a French rap group that were up on the stage. They were kind of like the Beastie Boys, but singing in French. And I'm sure they sucked, but I had a great time listening to it because I didn't have to hear the bad lyrics, because I'm sure they were bad, you know?
Yeah, but, well, look, I mean, talking of French, like Serge Gainsbourg, for example, I love some of his stuff. When he's good, he's amazing, particularly his more psychedelic stuff. But again, I don't know the lyrics, and the lyrics are probably horribly macho, probably like really disparaging of women of the time.
Yeah.
So that's not spoilt for me now.
Yeah.
So I was just curious about that, because I don't mind it at all. I quite like it.
Yeah. All right, let's cruise ahead. You're listening to Five from Sevens and Twelves, and we're today talking about hidden gems. Let's listen to another song. Mark, so we are at the arse end of 2022, another ways that you can find some hidden gems is the end of year lists that so many publications, radio stations, print media, websites put out at the end of the year. And so this song that you're about to talk about is one that you discovered through one of the end of year lists, and we'll talk about those a little bit. So what's the song?
Okay, so the song is Michael Head and the Red Elastic Band. The track is called Gino. Gino and Rico, and the album is called Dear Scott.
I really enjoyed the song. It's really lush and quite sort of beautifully played.
Classic guitar pop, like well-crafted. Michael Head's interesting because he started with a band called the Pale Fountains in the early 80s, had a minor, maybe had a couple of chart hits, and then has been in another band called Shack.
And you were saying, so he's been playing for 40 years without much attention.
Yeah, critically acclaimed, but no real like commercial acclaim. A lot of other songwriters have gone, this guy's incredible. Like, he's really well thought of, particularly in the northwest of England. He's from Liverpool, which, as you know, has produced a few decent singer-songwriters over the years. But the reason I chose this really is because we're talking about hidden gems. And as you said, the time is upon us with the end of year reviews. Now, I've already named Chet Piccolo Records as being my favourite record store in Manchester, but they're also famous for their end of year reviews. They produce a booklet, you can pop in and pick it up, you can check it online, but they review the top 100 albums. The top 100 albums. Mm. So staff picks.
I was just looking at my bookshelf over here, because I've got one from when I was there. But I can't see it there. But yeah,
I've got quite a few of them at home. So yeah, the top 100 albums they review, it's staff reviewed. There's a huge number of people work there because they
do. And the
do
good thing about those ones is that they do have a lot of stuff from the northwest of England. So, you know.
Yeah, they'll have local stuff in there as well. Like Michael Head. You know, he's from just down the road in Liverpool.
Yeah.
So it's not always international. But What I love about it is they spend so much time on it. Mm. So you look through it now. If you look at the online one, you've got like a little, like an actual review of the album. Then they've got like all the staff chime in as to their, so they've got about, you know, they've got review, then they've got a couple of tracks you can listen to, then they've got the track listing of the album if you click on it, then they've got how you can order it, and then below it they've got the staff talking about why it's their favorite album or what they like about it. So again, you get a real feel for what the album's going to be like, you know.
Sort of piques your interest because you've got enough information to go. Which ones should you delve a bit deeper?
Yeah,
seeing as they do 100 or whatever. Yes. You know, it's like you need that little bit of an insight.
Yeah, you do. And so Michael Head and the Red Elastic Band was number one. Danger Mouse and Black Thought from the Roots, that's number two. And then you got, I'll just cherry pick a few others, got the Orioles. I thought they were really interesting as well. And I've put quite a few of these on their playlist for today. TVAM, that's a great track as well. The album High Life Art. Wet Leg, we were talking about them earlier.
A great band from this year, aren't
what
they?
What a real breakout they are. Yeah. And what a great band
as well. I think Chase Long came out last year.
No, it did as a single, but the album came out this year. So the album's just called Wet Leg.
Yeah.
Duo from the Isle of Wight, or they were, now they've got a full band. There's a great setup there on KEXP on YouTube. I watched that last night, actually. They're brilliant. It's a lot more punky live than the records, a little bit more.
KEXP is another really good shout out for finding new stuff,
particularly live really stuff, you know.
That's out of Seattle, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Similar to RTRFM here. Yeah. Another one, Yard Act. They're another one, like a northern.
We're listening to them.
The album The Overload's worth checking out as well. Working Men's Club. There's a whole bunch of them. There's a whole bunch of stuff. So I'd recommend people go and check it out. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, it's a great way to really catch up on those albums you may have missed.
Yeah.
Like, what is your... Because I know you're a big one on end of year reviews and stuff. So where would you traditionally go?
I look at quite a few. I do Uncut Magazine, Pitchfork, even though that's kind of like mainly to hate it.
But look, the trouble with Pitchfork is that they'll tell you an album's amazing. They'll give it 10 out of 10. You listen to it and you're like, this is awful.
They got it right this year.
What was the one?
Always. Have you listened to Always from Toronto?
No.
Oh, they're really good. It's Always with two V's. So A-V-V-A-Y-S.
I do know who you mean. I haven't followed up on them.
They're really good. They're worth checking out. And their song, I think it's Brenda Says, is a really good, that's a really good song.
Okay.
But having said that, like I listened on the way to the beach yesterday to a bunch of them. Yeah. And like some of it is like, how is this in the top 10? It's terrible.
Yeah.
I listened to RTR's top 100, like the most played in the year.
You shared me the number one,
which we weren't thrilled with. It is a local release, so I don't want to like, you know.
And look, you know what?
It's a good song.
I think it was fine. It felt like an idea. You know when a band has a bit of a, like, this is half an idea.
Yeah.
And then they go, and let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, where like, if you'd have maybe added something else, or maybe the song had gone somewhere else it just seemed to roll along with that one idea.
Yeah.
I felt like they were missing.
Yeah, it didn't really go anywhere, did it?
No,
it was okay. Like,
it was
nice,
all right. What was the songwriter again?
I forget her name, but I know the song was Gaslight.
Yes, that's right.
Or Gaslighting. Yeah, it's a local song. You can look it up while I'm having a chat. So the other one that I thought was like, what is this thing? Was in the Pitchfork list, Beyonce had a song, and it was Alien Superstar or something like that. And that song is like so ghastly. It's so bad.
There's
no melody to it. You know, and you're kind of like, I don't understand quite why this stuff is getting played. But, you know, like that's kind of what the end of year lists is really fun for in a way. My favorite song of the year is probably Angel Olsen, Big Time. I don't know if did you listen to that album at all?
Yeah, I did have a listen to that. It was pretty good, actually.
It's a really great album.
Pretty good. She's playing soon, isn't she?
Yeah, she's coming for the Perth Festival. And that was a really, I think, brilliant album. I guess it's one of those where it's like, it doesn't break new ground in any way,
no.
But it's a really well-written album, well-played, really good singing.
Look, I mean, that's a bit like this Michael Head in the Red Elastic Band. Like, it's not, like, you know, you probably won't see this in the end of year for Pitchfork, because it's not weird or cool enough.
Yeah.
In a way. It's like classic guitar pop.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it's not going to blow your mind. It's not something you've never heard before. Yeah. But knowing that...
It's still so brilliant,
it's
right?
It's so really well nice. Written. Yeah. It's, the playing on it's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a big reason for that is he collaborated with, or it was produced by Bill Ryder Jones,
yeah.
who used to be the guitarist in The Coral, and then has since then gone on to become a producer, solo musician, etc. Composer, he's even composed music with the Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra. Mm. So he's a bit of a like a musical genius. He's yeah. only a very young guy. Anyway, he came in to produce this album, and he's a killer guitar player.
Yeah, there's a lot of space on the record. You can tell straight away that there's been a lot of thought into
it. There's a lot of thought in how to produce and layer, because even when, you know, you might hit a chorus and you've got trumpets and this going on, they're all stuck. There's gaps between
yeah,
it all.
You can hear everything
like
very
dense.
Clearly.
Yeah. yeah. So
you know, the other one that's quite good for checking out is Triple R in Melbourne. The,
yeah,
you know,
it's
the,
very good.
That's always a really good one for end of year lists. And NPR in America is another one yes. that always is like a really interesting eclectic mix of end of year lists. Are
yeah.
there any others that you'd like to look at?
Well, look, I mean, I'm a bit of a Luddite. I stick to things like, well, I will usually check out RTR, our
yeah.
local, as we just mentioned. But Piccadilly Records is usually, I do have a look at Pitchfork as well.
Yeah.
And then apart from that, it's also just friends, like
yeah.
friends who were suggesting, like, for example, you know, the podcast that we quite like, Sombrero Fallout.
Yeah.
He's done his own Festive 40 because John Peel used to do Festive 50.
Yeah.
So there's a two-parter or three-parter might be now. No, two-parter of his end-of-year list. And then if you join up the Friends of Sombrero Fallout on Facebook, all the people who listen to the podcast, they're all putting theirs on.
Oh, that's,
and they're
that's
going,
great.
They're going, hey, man, this is my best of. And then what's yours? And then other people are going, oh, the favorite live act was this, favorite band. And so I've been sort of ad hoc, like picking up ideas and bands through that.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah. and then like yourself, you're always pretty good. Like you used to always do I used to do your own best of.
I just do a top 10 on Facebook.
Yeah,
and
yeah, 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 yeah. So that's how I yeah. find it. It'll be more like through friends.
The weird
and...
thing to me is that, like, how much music some people are listening to, right? Because I can look at a lot of the top 100s and go, fuck, I don't know 60
yeah,
of
yeah,
those songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like,
oh, look,
all
I'm the same.
Year.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like, because
yeah.
I don't claim to be any expert on music
no.
or, like, you know. And if I was going to listen to stuff, a lot of the time I'd find something from like 1962 that I like or whatever.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's not
yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm sort of out trying to find the
yeah.
latest of latest music. But it's that's what's so good about it, right? In terms
totally.
Of finding some new music
yeah.
is like someone else has like listened to stacks because it's their job
yeah,
or
yeah,
they
yeah,
love
yeah,
it
yeah,
so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you can kind of cherry pick and go
yeah.
through and go like, oh yeah, that's
yeah.
pretty cool or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, so most of the time I'm like at the end of the year going like, now's my opportunity to find out what 2022 bought, you know? Like,
yeah,
no fucking
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, yeah. And look, what I do, I often do it like a two-pronged approach. So for example, you know, something like we talked about the band like Wet Leg, for example.
Yeah.
So I've heard the singles, Chase Lounge, and I've heard a few others, Wet Dream and all that, and I'm like, this is cool. But then I'm like, okay, like I wanted to see what they're like live,
mm-hmm.
see if they're any different, and that's why I went to the KEXP. And I've done the same with quite a few of these bands that have ended up on these best ofs,
yeah.
where I've gone on and gone, okay, I've listened to a few of the tracks, I really liked it. Let's see if I can find a decent recording of a live and just see, because often you get to see the real band.
Yeah.
You know, you get to see them not in the studio. So like Wet Leg, for example, you know, you listen to it and you listen to Wet Dream, and it's sort of, a lot of it is almost like a conventional pop song, a little bit punky, but it's a pop song and it's quite smooth and well produced. And then you listen to the live version and it's like,
more intense.
There's three guitars on there,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the drummer's a bit, it's a lot more like in your face.
Yeah. And they've been touring
so,
like crazy over the
yeah,
last year.
And
so
you can always tell that with bands.
Yeah, they get better and better, and
you know,
yeah.
so I tend
well, I wanted to,
say
as well, actually, just before we wrap up on the on this particular
yeah.
artist, is this one reminded me another thing that I haven't listened to for ages, but like Primrose Green was an album that came out in 2015. It's by an artist called Riley Walker. He's a Chicago guy, and like when we were listening to this outside before, I was like, oh, this sounds a little bit like that kind of vibe. That was just another hidden gem that I discovered that I wanted to give a shout out to. So Primrose Green is another good one to check out.
Well, I haven't heard that, so I'm definitely going to make a note of that. Now, also, while we were just chatting then, I just double-checked the name of the artist who had the number one for RTRFM 92.1, and it was Anna Schneider with Gaslight.
I hadn't heard her before.
No, I hadn't. And she's local.
She's local. She's from Perth. And, you know, it's pretty amazing as well that someone who is from our hometown is getting played that much on a radio station and getting that much exposure. So, you know, like, that's cool, right? Props to the radio station.
Really cool. Well, look, I know also Web Rumors had at least one or two tracks in that top 10, top 15.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of local stuff.
And they're local as well. I know, like, Last Quokka, Q's, that was in the top 15. So, you know, hats off to these stations for, like, not just playing the alternative music, but really pushing what's happening locally in the city.
Yeah.
And look, you know, as well as the end of your list, get out there and see these bands. Like, find out when they're coming to town. Jump on, like, grab your tickets, go out and see them, you know, because that's a brilliant way to see bands, you know. Yeah. And you know what? A little tip as well. Always see the support band.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're seeing touring bands. Yeah, exactly. I know. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Exactly.
But no, but seriously, because look, the reason that I mention it is because when we talk about hidden gems, how do you find out about bands?
Mm.
When I was young, you know, you're seeing touring bands coming through Manchester. So you get in early because you don't know who you're going to see.
Mm.
And I went to see back in the 80s. It would have been like 86, I'm thinking. I was pretty young. I was definitely underage. And the Throw Muses were in town. And I loved the Throw Muses on 4AD label. Thought they were great. You know, who's supporting them? Who comes on at 8:30 at night? The Pixies.
So
I mean,
good.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Seriously, you know, the Pixies
were
supporting.
And we are both lifelong Pixies fans.
You know, so you never quite know. And in fact,
we saw them a couple of weeks ago
in
Perth at the Arts Centre. So
how good was that show, by the way?
Great show, yeah. One of the best of the year.
Awesome.
All right, mate. Well, let's go have a swim in the pool, I reckon.
Yeah.
And then we'll get back to it.
Excellent. So we're on to your fourth choice today, Dave, on the show, and we have a band called Flasher, and the track is called Pressure. Now, I know nothing about this band at all, so you're going to have to fill me in a little bit on their background, who they are, etc., but I did really like the track.
Yeah, that's why it's a little bit of a hidden gem, because I think this band would have done really well for themselves if they were able to keep pumping out good albums. They brought out the album Constant Image in 2018 on Domino, and it's a really brilliant record.
Yeah.
And the band kind of like had lots of problems with the recording and with touring, to the point where one of the key members, the bass player and singer, left the band when they brought out their sophomore album after that. They actually had a different lineup, and it was one of those. They really are one of those bands where, like, they are, you know, more than the sum of their parts kind of thing. They really need to have all of the different elements. So when they brought out the new album, it was a completely different style. And I had to listen to that and really didn't get much out of it. It was a sort of like 3 out of 5 type of album.
Okay.
But Constant Image in 2018, I go back to all the time. I got it on vinyl and just like, it's one that I really listen to regularly. And I reckon it's a perfect record. It's like really great from start to finish. Every song on there is pumping, and they've got really interesting lyrics.
Yeah.
So it was one of those bands that they're a bit of a hidden gem because they brought out this really great album, but then when they were touring, they kind of had these sort of issues internally and never got to kind of like continue that journey and like get more fans and build up over time. They actually toured with the Breeders in the States, so they got like quite a bit of recognition on that first album. And
this is the 2018 debut.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So right around that era, they were supporting the Breeders around
Isn't
the US.
It interesting though, like how this sounds like a tale from throughout the ages.
Yeah,
these bands that certain things come along. You know, they've got everything in place. They should be huge. They've got all the songs, got everything, but then complications with recording and touring and people not getting on. It's like, it's an ancient story. It's happened over and over again, hasn't it?
Exactly. I mean, one of the band members, Mulitz, who stayed in the band, said this. He said, sometimes you hit a point on tour when you get in the van and no one's speaking to each other. You start sound check and you don't want to make eye contact with your bandmates. And that's kind of where they were at the conclusion of the, you know, this particular release. And, you know, you end up sometimes as a band, I've sort of had this before, where you have a long period of time recording the stuff and you've been playing those songs for a long period before that. Sometimes you kind of don't even like those songs that much anymore. Yeah. And you're kind of like trying, you know, yeah. I've never been in a band that's like a big touring band kind of thing. But when you're touring them, you're playing these songs that you don't really like every night. And sometimes you're playing them with a group of people that you've kind of like spent, you know, a whole bunch of time in a stinky van with. And so I think like sometimes bands just don't have the staying power to make it kind of work. And so, you know, for these guys, in terms of their, I would say their legacy, even though they still are a band, you know, they've really only got this one album that is fantastic, worth checking out, and like, you know, a really cool little thing.
So can I, just one curious thing, I'm just wondering what you think about this. It's like, but when you've got a new lineup change, it's almost like a new band in a way. Why didn't they just have a new name or a new project, or was it they were already signed to a label?
They did talk about that on one interview that I read, and so Emma Baker and Taylor Mulitz are still playing in the band, but they're actually just a duo. They didn't get a new member, They kind of felt like the vibe of the band was still enough Flasher, and they had done enough work to make that worthwhile keeping. I think they should have changed it, because if you listen to the new album, it's like a completely different band. It's like pop music. The new album is a lot more synth-based pop music, a lot more clean production. And, you know, the driving bass lines that Saperstein brought to the band was like a really key element. And his backing vocals and the sort of 1-2 punch of the vocals was a really key element to the band.
Yeah, right.
So I think as soon as you take that away, to me, it's not Flasher anymore. No. And that's why the next album is not as good. They do have a Tiny Desk concert that is really worth checking out, where they strip the songs right back.
Yeah, that's the NPR, isn't it?
Yeah, the NPR. Yeah. So, I mean, for them, they were playing in front of their friends and family, because that's recorded in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of a... They talked about that as being like a really big moment for them, because, you know, all of these really big bands go on NPR and on the Tiny Desk concert. Another really good way of finding good new tunes is checking the YouTube out for that. But yeah, they played that, and it was kind of like, they felt like it was, you know, a really crowning achievement for them, because they were playing in front of their absolute best mates and I think one of them has a connection or a friend who works there as well. So that's kind of like got a little in even though they were a fairly small band at the time, they still got to do one of those.
But that's still national exposure. It's huge.
Huge. Yeah. Massive, you know, for a band, right?
It would be like the equivalent over here of being on some kind of Triple J, you know, live recording or something, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, Emma from the band also plays in a band called Big Hush, which I checked out. They're also really worth listening to. They had this song called Soft Eyes, which is another little hidden gem. That's so two for the price of one there for you.
Excellent. I do love it. Well, like, look, I really like this track, and I did check it out. I think actually I saw some live stuff of theirs, and it was really good. Lots of energy, good, great song. So I'll definitely check out the album. What was the album called again?
Constant Image.
Constant Image.
Definitely worth a listen.
On Domino.
Yep.
Awesome. Great, great choice there, Dave. And thanks for bringing that to the show.
Nice. Let's listen to your next song. All right, you're listening. listening to Fire From, and the next track here, we had a listen out on the back veranda area of our house, and I really enjoyed it. Never heard of the band before, so it's perfect for our show today on Hidden Gems. It's the Nightingales, a band that I hadn't even heard of the name of, so tell me a little bit about it. What's the song?
Sure. Well, the song is called Gales Dark, and it was taken from their Mind Over Matter, Louder Than War release in 2015. And we were just saying how amusing the
it's a really
track
funny
is. It's
song.
Really quite funny, isn't it? Because essentially, well, look, check it out on the playlist. But it's got the band playing, and then it's got this kind of presenter like who's rocked up to talk to the band about this song and how they do their songwriting process. So it's a kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of piss take.
This is how to be in a band.
This is how to be a band. This is how we write our songs. And look, the reason that I picked it, Dave, is because, not only because we're talking about Hidden Gems today, and to be honest, I'm a bit like you. I know the name of the band, but I don't know the band very well.
Mm.
They had a lot of John Peel sessions, who we talked about earlier in the show. So I'm aware of the name, but I didn't particularly ever explore them so much. They're from Birmingham, and the reason I picked it is because there's a fantastic doco about them called King Rocker,
okay,
which was put out and produced by Stuart Lee. I don't know if you know Stuart Lee. He's an English comedian.
Okay.
He's very good, actually. He's been going for years. He's kind of like, how can I describe him? He's sort of one of these comedians that pushes the boundaries all the time.
Right.
So he would probably think of himself as being like the Miles Davis of comedians. Like, he's always experimenting with the format and the jokes and stuff.
Well, I love
it's
that
really
kind
good.
Of thing, so I'll have to
it's
check
really
it out.
Check it out. Stuart Lee.
Is he on national TV on in England much, or is he more of a like behind? Okay.
So he's more he's more like of a comedian's comedian. You hear all the other comedians going, Stuart Lee's the god.
Right.
Because he's quite inventive. But anyway, the reason I mentioned, so he produced this doco called King Rocker about the band. And they were one of his favourite bands growing up, because he grew up in Birmingham as well. So the band started in 1979. So Stuart Lee would be in his mid-50s, late-50s now. So he would have been coming of age when these guys were one of the biggest local bands. They've since then released 12 albums. They took a break in the late 80s and then got back together in 2004. But the reason I picked this is because, for me, I found loads of hidden gems through exploring obscure music docos.
Mm.
Yeah, so this one for is a great example, King Rocker, and I very much recommend checking it out. It's really quite funny.
Mm.
The lead singer's really funny as well.
When you get the story of the band, it makes you want to go and like check out the Spotify, and you immediately go, this is like actually a really interesting story, and then you get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the band themselves are based around the lyricist and singer Robert Lloyd. And like I said, started in 1979, and in fact started in a punk band called the Prefex, and they actually were part of the Clash's White Riot tour.
Right, so they go all the way back to '70s, right?
When
we were listening to the stuff outside, I really got more of a like 2000s-y vibe.
Okay. Well, this did come out in mid-2000s.
Oh, this one did.
Sorry, 2015. So this is a more recent one.
Yes, okay.
So now, obviously, so that was the kind of, I guess, the start of them. But this doco is fantastic. And the reason that I mention this is because, like, over the years, we talked before about Brian Jonestown Massacre and that great doco dig, you know, and that's how we found out about the band.
And it's probably the first rock documentary that I watched where I was kind of like so excited by they're fighting on the stage and they can't get they've got all the industry people there. For anyone who is into music, Dig is such a fantastic watch.
It's my favorite.
It's
my favorite. Now, I did suggest we do a podcast around musical documentaries, which we haven't got around to it now.
Yeah.
We may never do. So I'll just mention a few of my favorites, which I just as recommendations. So I got Dig, one of my favorites. The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Yeah.
Have you watched that? That's fantastic.
It's a really interesting
bit where he's in New York with Sonic Youth and he's had some kind of psychotic episode and disappeared and they're all trying to ring his parents and stuff.
That one is one where the documentary is super interesting and then I listened to his music and was just like, oh, there's nothing here for me.
There's a few great songs, I must admit, but you need to wade through a lot of home recordings
and
on
that was
a Casio
like a whole
keyboard.
Like Kurt Cobain was a massive fan of his and wore the t-shirt and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of interesting elements to that one.
There is. is other shout outs he has for great docos. We've got Fearless Freaks. Have you ever seen that?
No, that's Flaming Lips one. That's brilliant. I know you told me about that.
Quite confronting.
Yes.
It's a bit like Dig, because with Dig there was their friend of the band who'd actually recorded the doco.
Yeah.
So
and you were saying he's Fearless sort of Freaks living is in this the same. Like, fairly like rundown.
Oh, mate.
That, area and everything that, like
that's my favourite bit. He's like Oklahoma City and he's mowing the lawn in a white suit.
Yeah.
With like Wellington boots on. And across the road is guys selling crack and stuff. Yeah. And he's walking around in like a white suit. Morning, oh, with his so big good. Hair. And everyone's look. You can see like all these people looking and like, he's the local crazy, yeah. You know. But anyway, brilliant. I really recommend that. It's quite confronting because it talks a lot about addiction. Because Stephen Droid in the band was famously had a real problem with heroin and it almost destroyed him and the band. And there's some confronting scenes. But Warts and All Docker, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Also, a band called Death. Have you ever watched that one? That's a great
I know
docker.
That one. I haven't seen it, actually. But
I love that. I love that just for the fact that you've got this amazing band. Could have been fantastic. All these labels wanted to sign them. But they were like, you've got to change the name. Yeah. And the lead singer was like, nah, not doing it.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where his music really never hardly... Well, it's sort of come out now.
Yeah, years later,
but
right?
40 years later. But
they're a group of like African-American punkers, aren't they?
They are. Kind of garage punk, I suppose. Yeah. It's not that punky, but it's great. It's great. It's, that's a really good one. A Cure for Pain.
Don't know that.
The Mark Sandman story, the guy from Morphine. Yeah. That's a really good, amazing doco.
The Flying Nun one that you shared. I watched that a few weeks ago. That's a really interesting one, just from a point of view of like getting to know that record label and the Dunedin sound.
Yeah, and also, I guess, footage of those bands, which is hard, and there's not much out there.
Yeah,
original footage of all those amazing New Zealand bands. So, yeah, that's a really good one as well. And then also, we've talked about Lawrence, haven't we, from Felt, or I've been sort of sharing Felt, this obscure UK band with you recently, and he's got a doco called Lawrence of Belgravia, which is amazing as well. So that was the reason why I brought this up, because for me, you know, I hadn't really investigated the Nightingales, you know, hadn't investigated Brian Jonestown, but through checking out these amazing, slightly obscure music docos, that's another great way
How do you find out the next one to watch? Are you on YouTube and then you watch them so they kind of pop up in the recommended videos and you kind of go down
rabbit hole? There is a little bit of that. Yeah. It'll just pop up. You go, oh, I didn't know they had a doco about this, and I'll check it out. There's that, or I think I just did a bit of Googling, like, you know,
best ones or whatever.
Like, you know, and went through and checked. So, you know,
I even really like some of those ones that were really big, like Anvil, right?
Where
And some kind of monster, the Metallica documentary, because those are hilarious. It's like they're more Spinal Tap than Spinal Tap.
They are I was going to say, like, especially the Metallica one, I found it hard work wading through it because I've got no interest in the band. I don't like the music. Yeah. So I kind of went to it thinking they were going to be douchebags.
And they really deliver.
They really are. And one of my favourite moments is that, do you remember when the bass player left the band and he formed this other band and they went to see him in this little pub and they all were like, oh, my God. He's the future. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Like, they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Anyway, that band that he was in then have just
done nothing. But it's also because they're kind of like, they're always playing these enormous stadiums and they go to a small place to watch him and they're kind of like, whoa, there's people getting into the music. Because they're always about like, you know, 50 feet away from the first punter. So they were just like, whoa, this is like being back in the early days of Metallica or something. They've completely forgotten anything to do with the club.
They're so far removed
from that. And Lars Ulrich is doing his like artwork sales and making squillions and stuff.
Oh, yeah, selling his Picasso paintings and stuff. It was unbelievable. I mean, look, it's worth watching now, but
how about
the psychologist? That's one of the weirdest moments.
They're trying to kick the psychologist
out
of the
band. And he's trying to write, giving him ideas for lyrics, because he thinks he's almost in the band.
The absolute best bit is when they come up with the line, my lifestyle determines my death style, and then they're so excited about it,
they thought it was the best line ever.
they thought, this is better than anything Dylan's done. Like,
I do remember that. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
So definitely worth checking out. There's loads, isn't there, though? There's loads of great
docos. We'll have to share a few on the website and kind of get that going. So yeah, definitely documentaries is another really cool way to find some new tunes to listen to. So thanks for sharing that with us, Mark.
Absolutely. Yeah, love it. So, Dave, we are at the tail end of the podcast today. We've got your final choice for today, and it's a band that I think are fantastic. I must admit, I do need to explore them a little bit more. I believe they're from New York City. They're the Budos Band.
Yeah, they're from Staten Island, and like this is they're just such a great instrumental band that like you can. I was putting some IKEA furniture together the other day, and I just put on like all of their old albums, and it was like the perfect soundtrack for that. I might be stretching the hidden gems here a little bit because I think the Budos Band is probably fairly well known, but I kind of have no idea how big they are. It's hard to tell sometimes with bands. I saw them at the Perth Festival, which is like again a really good way of discovering new music because you know the Perth Festival and other stuff like that in, you know, any listener's city is like you can kind of go along to a show for that is brought in, curated by a group of people who are listening to stacks of tunes, and often it's kind of like going to be a little bit different to, you know, what's going on in music. Like they're not kind of like as I guess trying to be on the pulse or whatever. They're sometimes just finding something that's a little bit, you know, different, a little bit of pushing people's boundaries a little bit. The Perth Festival's done that really well over the years. Sometimes they bring in really enormous things, like they've got Bjork this year. But then you can also just take a punt on a few things. So I'm going to Mora Mokhtar. I think we're both going to that one. Which again is like, you know, that's some really interesting music that probably wouldn't be brought to the city if it wasn't for the festival. No. I'm going to Soccer Mummy, which is, I think she's doing really well. And a few other things, right?
Just a little point on that Soccer Mummy. Should have called it Soccer Mum, surely.
Yeah, I hate that band.
It's a much better name, Soccer Mum.
The only thing about Soccer
Mummy
is it's a little bit more memorable. You know, it's like slightly more memorable, but it's also slightly like more annoying.
Anyway, sorry, mate. I interrupted you there.
No, not at all. But
that's been bothering me, that band name for a while.
I listened to her album because, you know, a friend of mine from work said, hey, we should go with a group of people to this. So we all got tickets and I hadn't really listened to it. And I listened to the album the other day and I was like, this is good. Like, it's really good. Yeah. It's good tunes. It's quite 90s.
Critical Darlings. Yeah. But then, you know, like you say, okay, so it's a bit 90s. But to be honest, it always makes sense because every generation of musicians look back a couple of decades.
Yeah.
So the 90s now is not nostalgic.
Well, there's documentaries on Netflix about like remember the 90s and stuff now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, and also, I guess that's when their parents grew up almost.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's almost like them, you know, your mum and dad's record collection has got the Breeders in or whatever, or, you know, Bikini Kill. So it makes sense.
Totally. Well, so a little bit about Budos Band. They're described online as doom rock, afro soul, big band with a 70s touch, which kind of like tells you a little bit about their sound. It's all instrumental. They played a lot of listeners may know Charles Bradley. He got quite big for a while there a couple of years ago before he passed. But he was like a James Brown cover artist for most of his time. And then he started bringing out some original music towards the end of his life. And they played on Changes, the biggest song that he brought out, which was a cover of what's that band that does Paranoid there? Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath song.
Yeah.
And then Budos Band has 6 albums out and all of them are really good. My favorite, the name is going to, it's like Burnt Offering. Yeah, Burnt Offering is my favorite for recommendations. Their Live on KEXP is really good. And again, a really cool way to get some stuff to listen to. KEXP is a radio station in Seattle. And they do just like really good in-studio sessions.
Yeah.
There's just really well recorded, really good range of bands. the Critical Darlings this year always have a really good one as well. Really cool one to check out.
Yeah,
well, and they just have lots of good stuff on there.
Yeah, no, they do. In fact, on the podcast, on we've got the link on. I've got the link to a live performance. I think it's one they did in Paris, though, rather than the KEXP.
Yeah,
awesome. I've already chucked that up there.
Yeah, cool.
But Budos Band, they're aren't they? They're associated with Daptone Records.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes.
So you had Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Yeah, and they and some of the members played on those.
Mean and Street Band and Budos Band, and I think a lot of those guys just play on each of those acts.
Yeah, they do. I tried to look into a little bit like why they've got, you know, good chops in terms of like the horn section and stuff like that, and I couldn't really find too much about it. It's probably there, but you know, they seem to be, you know,
the next level
extremely good musicians to me, but I don't play, you know, saxophone or a trumpet or anything like that, but those guys seem to be absolute beasts.
But what I would say with the Budos Band, though, compared to the other acts we just mentioned, Killing Charles Bradley, the Budos Band was a bit heavier.
Yeah, yeah. Some of their earlier stuff is more like groovy, and then like Burnt Offering has a lot of like
heavy
metal influences.
And stuff. Yeah, like, I could see hear that. Yeah.
Distorted guitars with riffs along with a sort of like soul horn section.
There's a lot of them on stage.
Move on now, because we've had a really wonderful time today doing our first episode. We're going to be coming back and doing lots of themes on 5 from 7s and 12s, and also you can follow it along on our social media and the website. We're also going to put up, just because it's just been the end of 2022, we're going to put up 22 tracks each that's our favourite songs of the year as a sort of Spotify playlist, so we can share some of our favourite of the latest tunes. Anything you've been listening to or reading or getting up to recently, Mark, that you want to share, recommendations?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, in terms of music, I've just recently come across a band I thought were pretty interesting called Japanese Television. Do you know them?
No.
No, they're based in London. They're a surf psych band, and they call themselves the world's only 100% surf space band.
Awesome.
All instrumental. It's not the same as the Budos Band. It's a bit more out there, but that's really cool. So I really enjoyed that. I've just finished reading a fantastic book, Good Pop, Bad Pop, which I know you've got, by Jarvis Cocker.
Yep, I just started it. It's great. It's so well done.
It's heaps of fun. Well, what I love about it is he's using, instead of just writing his standard autobiography, he's talking about going through some. He's got this loft in friend's house where for years and years he just used to throw stuff in there. He didn't have it all neatly stacked. He just like had a hatch, and he just threw all this stuff in there. So anyway, after all these years, some of this stuff's been there 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
His friends are like, mate, like, you've got to clear
out.
Can you clear this bloody loft space
out?
It's
got that look, the local language too, right, where he's kind of like, is it a cob or a keep?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I love it. At the start of the book, he's talking a lot about fashion and how he was way more into how pulp looked rather than the sound. And, you know, I always wonder about that kind of stuff too, because he had a master plan from school, even the name Pulp. Yeah, and the weird thing about it as well is he was kind of like, oh, I don't want to have to learn music, chords and stuff, but he still knew he wanted to be a pop star and he wanted to get into that world, so that was a really cool,
Oh, look, I love it. What I do love is, like I said, he's used this as a way to unpack his career and his life and his story
rather than Warren Ellis does something similar in Nina Simone's Gum, like, which is a recent book. I haven't read that yet, but I think it's like artifacts over his life and stuff like that. So I think it's a similar sort of concept, but I might be wrong. I just saw that the other day when I was scoping out a bookshop.
I don't know if you noticed, but I had a look. I think it was on, I think it just popped up on YouTube, but I don't know if you've seen it. Nick Cave and Warren Ellis recently played a show at Hanging Rock.
That would be awesome.
I've got to watch that.
I just saw
a few seconds of it and I went, I'll save that.
Yeah.
Couple of podcasts. I won't talk them on too much, but just a couple of podcasts to recommend. The Coming Storm podcast by Gabriel Gatehouse. That's brilliant. That looks about, it unpacks the storming of the White House.
Oh, cool.
And it looks at like what happened with all that misinformation and et cetera. Juan Carlos, Colombian international thief. That's a riot. That's a brilliant, that's a really, really good, podcast as well, I'd recommend. What about yourself? Anything you've been listening to, watching?
Well, one that I've sort of been, that I can't remember exactly where I found this last week, but I might butcher the name here, but it's Kikagaku Moyo. It's a Japanese band, and they're really cool. It's like a really sort of psychedelic wash of noise. They're really good. I've got that in my top 22 of 22.
Oh, great. And yeah, yeah.
I loved that. I thought that was really cool. In terms of podcasts, I haven't really been listening because I've been on holidays. I usually listen when I'm going to work, so I haven't listened to too much. I'm reading Hippopotamus at the moment by Stephen Fry, and
I'm three quarters
of the way through it, and I still just don't know if I really like it. So I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay. No, that's fair. Sometimes these things happen.
Yeah.
You get things going, you go.
I like Stephen Fry's stuff in the past, but I don't know. I thought I'd try his novel. I think he has a few novels. Have you read that, Hippopotamus?
No. But I've had that before myself where I've tried autobiographies about people or biographies, and you think, oh, you know, Johnny Cash, for example, I read one of his.
So I had to
put it down because about halfway through, I hated him.
Right, yeah.
I really hated him.
This is just a fiction. It's like I read his autobiography or his diaries and stuff previously, and they're actually pretty interesting. But this is his fiction novel. And yeah, anyway, you know,
it's not doing it for
not
you.
Doing it for me so
That's
far.
That's okay. That's
so anyway,
okay.
We should wrap up. This has been episode one. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. We'll be coming back with lots of episodes. You have been listening to Fight from Sevens and Twelves. Thanks for being around here, Marky, and spending some time with me.
Been my pleasure. Really enjoyed it, Dave, and look forward to the next episode.